Good morning, everybody. The Chair Hopkins of the Special Committee on Energy calling the meeting to order at 11:02 a.m. And today is March 19th, 2019. Members today present are Representative Lincoln, Representative Zolkowski, Vice Chair Representative Sponholz, myself, Chair Greyer, Representative Greyer Hopkins. And let the record show that Representative Rauscher is excused since we have a quorum to conduct business. We are not conducting any business today because today's meeting is an overview from Curtis Thayer, the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. He'll be talking about the various programs and projects overseen by his organization and the role that Governor Dunleavy and his administration have in mind for this important agency. Mr. Thayer will entertain questions from the committee members during his presentation. As usual, please wait until the slide is done to ask questions. Hopefully that works for you as well. Why don't you come on up, introduce yourself for the record, and give us your presentation.
Hello. For the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority after being selected by the board just last month. Alaska's energy, AEA's mission is to reduce the cost of energy in Alaska. I'm sorry for the small table. I got a little notes here. One of the things is we're an independent agency and we're a corporate and we're a public corporation governed by a board of directors of seven, which we also share with ADA. AEA was created in 1976, so we've been here for the long haul, and we work on developing finance, operate and maintain energy systems, loan programs, as well as the PCE endowment distribution of that, as well as rail belt utilities, rail belt inner tie, and the Bradley Lake Dam outside of Homer. AE works with communities to provide safe and reliable energy across the state. This slide is a snapshot of where we have projects. So we touch just about every region of the state, including South Central, the rail belt, especially rural Alaska, and Southeast Alaska. These projects, anywhere from our circuit rider program, which I'll explain, to our PCE, they also receive bulk fuel upgrades, emerging technology, heat pump, heat recovery, biomass, wind, solar, just about covers the gamut across the board with the state. AE programs and projects. First off, our largest asset is the Bradley Lake Hydro Project outside of Homer. This slide represents that project. It is it's valued at $450 million. It was constructed with $328 million, half through bonding, half through appropriations from the state of Alaska. And what goes hand in hand with that is the Alaska Intertie. AEA also owns and operates the Intertie from Willow to Healy, bringing power north to Golden Valley. In addition, we do bulk fuel upgrades, we do rural power system upgrades, rural utility assistance, power cost equalization, PCE, renewable energy fund grants, power project fund grants, and alternative energy, and different project development and finances, whether that be through grants or that be through a loan program. Bradley Lake Hydro produces 10% of the rail belt electricity at about 4.5 cents a kilowatt. Members to benefit are all six utilities, Golden Valley, Mount Industry Electric, Municipal Light and Power, Chugach, Homer, and the City of Seward. Currently, we're undergoing a $47 million upgrade where we're doing a Battle Creek diversion. We're diverting a creek into Bradley Lake and to add 10% energy efficiency to Bradley Lake. We're in construction now and hope to have it done the end of this year or first of next year.
A good time, Mr. Thayer. Thank you. Yeah. That's a good time frame to hear. I was going to ask when it might be coming online. How is that project being funded? What are the financing mechanisms for
bonding?
It's all bonding, and
it's currently being bonded. Yes,
through AEA or through the utilities and the
through AEA and through the utilities, because utilities pay into some of the bonding that we currently owe. We owe money on Bradley Lake. And that money will be, or they pay into $12 million a year to pay off those bonds, which will be coming due on the Bradley Lake piece in 2 years. They'll be paid off, and then we have the Battle Creek diversion project at $47 million.
And so that'll just tack on top of it?
Separately.
Okay. And then are the percent breakdown to utilities going to be maintained the same? TruGas will get the same amount of electricity. GVE will get the same amount of electricity. The percentages, rather.
Yes. Yes. And we have a Briony Lake Hydro agreement between those six utilities. We're party seven to it. So this is the we're going to operate it the same way we have been operating it for the last since it came on you know, 30 years ago.
Thank you.
The Austin Intertie, 170 miles from Willow to Healy. It allows Golden Valley Electric Association to connect to and benefit from lower cost power, Briony Lake primarily. Improves reliability within the rail belt. And where I say reliability is during the earthquake that we experienced on November 21st, Golden Valley sent power to Anchorage as opposed to going north. And so that reliability was tested and obviously needed in South Central. It is operated jointly with railboat utilities. So the railboat utilities would be Chugach Electric, Municipal Light and Power, MEA, and Golden Valley. You do not have Seward or Homer in the equation just because they're not part of, they're not on the rail belt. And there's a 24 point, this is an interesting statistic, 24.4 million savings to GVA in 2018 by shipping Briony Lake Power north to for normally their cost of generation is. So there's a huge savings to Golden Valley with that operation of the Intertie.
I thought they also bought power from Chugach Electricity.
They do. But they also have Briony Lake at 4.5, so it leverages out. But with that Intertie, they're able, it's about a $27 million savings that they would have if they were not connected to the Intertie.
And then, thank you. Anybody else have any questions? How do you see this working with an AEA working with the upcoming Transco and the shared transmission cooperative with the utility?
Interesting thing. With the Transco, that is, the Transco is not a new concept. It's been around for about 6 years. They've been looking at doing it. We're not a party to the Transco because we don't have a distribution system. And we don't put power into the transmission system. We have the Intertie and we have Briony Lake, and in the current filing, which is 750 pages long, they leave Briony Lake to the current agreements we have as well as the Intertie. And so it would be an agreement between the utilities. Now we have filed, I just actually signed the letter yesterday, we have filed to intervene as somebody of interest since we have assets at Briony Lake as well as the Intertie, but we're not intervening to oppose it. It's to gather the information as we go through this process. Because right now, two utilities have not signed on. Only four have and two have not. So there's still some issues that need to be worked out between the utilities. So it's not going to be a quick process by any means.
No, it hasn't been. I remember when Governor Palin introduced the first one. More out of the back.
Yeah.
Do you think AEA should be a part of that, owning the transmission and have a seat at the table?
We already own 170 miles of the transmission.
I meant within Transco, have a seat at the table as they're dealing with different infrastructure decisions.
At this juncture, we don't see the need to have AEA at the table because a lot of it deals with the distribution of their power and transmission line. You know, we have our piece, but that we don't have customers. The customers are the ratepayers, but we don't have customers and boards of directors necessarily as they do with their individual co-ops. It's probably an area where government's not best to be in. Another thing with AEA is we do bulk fuel tank farm upgrades. We build code-compliant fuel storage facilities, preventing spills and contamination, and decreasing the per-unit cost of fuel by allowing communities to purchase fuel in bulk. There's been 118 projects completed since 2000. This one was just in 2017 in Kipnuk, being transported and up to Washington, from Washington, so you can see the tanks as they're being loaded. The state funding is committed close to $10 million into this project just in the last year, and we also receive about $1 million matching funds from the Denali Commission. So we do partner with the Denali Commission to try to stretch those dollars. Now there's 195 communities So we have a ways to go as far as it. And once we have these built, of course, there's a life cycle and there's maintenance ongoing on these. But this is something that is a key component.
Yeah, Representative Lincoln.
Yeah. So do you have a list of communities that you're working through, or if a community is interested in a bulk fuel tank farm, how would they?
I can, if you don't mind, I can get you that list. Okay. I don't have it with me, but we're able to do about 4 to 5 a year, and we have a build schedule out for a couple of years, and so I can get that list for you.
Okay.
And send it to you for what communities.
If you could get that to me, I'd be happy to disseminate that to the community.
Do you anticipate any significant changes to this program versus the last couple of years?
No, we do have capital, through the chair. We have through capital funds, we do have money to go out several years, and we just met with the Denali Commission yesterday to look at their partnering with us on continuing to build these storage units or at least bulk fuel, or at least to put money towards it. And they do not see necessarily about 30% of all Denali Commission money goes to the bulk fuel or it goes to our powerhouses. And so they're committed to that, and so are we. But I can get you that. I will get you that. I will get the committee the list.
Thank you.
Last question. So when you said that there's capital money, is that capital money that AEA already has, or are you anticipating capital funding from the state?
It's currently capital money that we currently have. And depending on the outcome of PCE with the legislature, with the governor's proposal, they're in the formula with PCE. If the fund reaches a certain amount, 70% can be used for other projects, and part of it is the bulk fuel. And we receive funding from that in 19 for that we're using this year for it. But it really depends on the earnings of the power cost utilization fund, because the first it goes to PCE, then it goes to community assistance, and then it would go into whether it be the bulk fuel tank or whether we go into the powerhouses at a 70% of the excess earnings.
So I do have one more.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's one more this time. If I understand you correctly, if the proposed changes to the PCE endowment and how it's funded, then you'd expect those funds to cease being available for those programs that spill over from after PCE is fully funded?
Correct. In the current proposal, the PCE fund would go to the CBR, and so the money would not be available, and so we would be in a competitive environment here in Juneau for capital dollars as well as operating dollars for AEA.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have a question? Okay. Does AEA have a job of ensuring that program continues to move forward in the future, ensuring that there is funding and the program that's on the books for you guys to run has the funds necessary to continue to run?
AEA does not, I'm saying, we're planning to continue to operate no matter the outcome of the budget situation, is because currently what the governor is proposing is the PCE funds get swept and put in the CBR, but it's still full, in the governor's budget, we're still fully funded. We're just, instead of receiving PCE dollars out of the endowment, we'll receive it out of the operating fund, which, like I said, it puts us into a competitive environment with many other programs, but it is fully funded for FY20. Obviously, an endowment model where you had that, there would be more of a guaranteed revenue stream that you could predict rather than a legislative process. But.
Thank you.
The next item is the Rural Power System Upgrades, RPSU. We do that to improve power systems efficiency, safety, and reliability. build code compliant facilities, and we always shoot to at least have a 10 to 20% improvement in diesel generation, and we've completed 86 of these projects since 2000. Again, we have 195 communities, and so with powerhouse upgrades, we've done 86. One thing I think it's important to note is we do have, like AVEC and other small utilities that operate some of these powerhouses, and these are part of their utility, but we do have about 80 small villages in rural Alaska that are not tied to a utility. The community runs the powerhouses, and so we're particularly attentive to these, is because we'll build those, we'll put these in the community, and they need to, and they'll operate them. But one thing too is if you're not, they don't have the expertise to run and operate one of the powerhouses like a utility does, then those are the ones sometimes we have trouble with maintenance on them, and the life expectancy aren't as great. And so that's a concern for us, is because once the grant is given, we build them, we put them in the community, they are the communities. We no longer own that asset or have a participation in that asset. But obviously, if there's a problem with that unit and the power goes out, they call AEA to come out and fix an electrical emergency. We've already done two in the last month. And some of these are due for various reasons, but that is just a concern of ours when you have these powerhouses and you put them out there, that we provide the training, and that, you know, in some of these communities you provide the training, you have somebody staffed up, and they have a better opportunity. So they leave it, and you restaff, and you do it again. And so that's where, you know, there's some sensitivities, I guess, with some of these powerhouses. But to do this, we've had over $5.4 million committed. The Denali Commission has given us $500,000. And so we're putting these, and again, we're putting these out about 3 to 4 a year we're able to complete and put into rural Alaska. And we also run this through the DARA program, which is the Diesel Emissions Reduction Act. It's a federal program, so we also receive funding through DARA. And in 2018, we completed 5 in Cake, Noonan, Quinlock, and Port Ellsworth is another, Beaver, and Clark's Point. So they're all across Alaska. And we do, again, prioritize these as we go out as far as which ones need the most maintenance or need to be replaced. And usually you can have 3 generators in each powerhouse, and so sometimes it's just a rebuilding of 1 generator or 2 generators. In rural assistance, we've done 130 circuit riders, rural utility workers going out and assisting in rural Alaska. We've had 38 community trainings in FY18, and we assisted in FY18 6 communities with electrical emergencies, and so far we've done 2 in just the last month. Actually completely unrelated, one's in rural Alaska and one was Tenneke Springs, so it's across the board, as far as it be southeast or whether it be rural. Power cost equalization program.
One second, Mr. Thayer. Mm-hmm. Going back to that one. Those are excellent. They help, you know, create jobs and maintain the ability, mm-hmm, to maintain those facilities. Is there work on the demand side efficiency, lowering the needs of the buildings, the community buildings, the homes in these communities to get the upgrades so that we have less demand for diesel fuel?
There are programs, but primarily we're doing the powerhouses on them. We partner with the communities to try to lower their cost. The state had a great program several years ago when we were very flush with dollars, run through Alaska Housing Finance for energy efficiency. But as those dollars waned, so has some of those to help in rural Alaska. There's still grant money available, and we still provide that, but not nearly to the degree that the state of Alaska had provided that assistance in the past.
Thank you.
Thank you for that comment. I had previously done some work in the nonprofit renewable energy kind of world, and one of the most prevalent low-hanging fruit in the issue of rural energy is definitely energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we appreciate the investment of the Alaska Energy Authority, and I hope that it's a vehicle we can continue to partner with in terms of meeting rural Alaska's needs. Mr. Chair, as an observation, is there's always a lot of conversation around renewable energy opportunities, mm-hmm, but if you're investing significant resources into inefficient systems, there's not really a lot of opportunity for cost savings, but just an observation.
No, I appreciate those comments. with the Power Cost Equalization Program, there's 194 communities currently receiving PCE. There's one community that has not done the reporting, and they have been, and the RCA has prevented them from receiving it. But once they get the reporting up, then we expect to have 195 communities receiving PCE. There was $27 million dispersed in FY18. And regular communications, we work with the local communities. We support the rural utility assistance and getting that information. And we've also now started, opened an online portal to increase the efficiency and accuracy for people to be able just to hopefully easier send us the information as opposed to send us paper copies of the 195 communities. And actually, for a couple, I have sent out, and we do have copies, we did get the PCE by community report done about 3 months early. With FY18 data, and I know that Representative Lincoln Zakowski will be receiving it because we wanted to make sure those people that had PCE in their community saw that community by community exactly what the PCE dollars look like and how their community kind of compared to other communities across the state. So you should have that shortly, today. I dropped it off at the mailroom. PCE, one thing we really want to point out is PCE is only a small piece of the community energy pie. Total PCE reimbursement is about 14%. And non-PCE ratepayers pay the other 86%. Those are commercial buildings. Those are people that are over the those are also government buildings, not community buildings, but government or schools that receive federal dollars do not receive PCE dollars. So really, PCE is a small portion of what a total community would use. This slide, I think, is particularly important to understand the PC endowment for the, and this was FY19 appropriations. The earnings off the PC endowment was $112 million, of which power cost utilization going to AEA was $32.4 million. The rural energy assistance, that's our cost for administering the program, was about $381,000. Of our $381,000, $120,000 went to the RCA. As they do PCE. And then the Revenue Treasury, the Department of Revenue, Department or Division of Treasury, they received $360,000 for their management cost of the fund. So we pay them, or that's taken off the top. So that left a balance of $79 million left. And with the past legislation that was passed, with the 70% unobligated formula, $55 million was left. $30 million went to community assistance programs, $14 million went to Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and $11 million went to rural power system upgrades. When we talk about the capital dollars, those are some of those capital dollars was based off the endowment, which then zeroed out the balance. Now, going forward, our understanding is the earnings are about $78 million. For last year, so not quite as robust as 112, and so obviously community assistance, renewable energy, and rural power system upgrades are going to have different amounts.
I've got a couple of questions. Thanks, Mr. Chair. So the bulk fuel, is that within the rural power system upgrades?
We can rotate between the two. Through the chair, we can dictate which one. This particular year, rural power system upgrades needed additional funding for what we had budgeted.
Okay, and the PCE fund itself is... That's sort of in AEA now, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so does the appropriation for these different programs go through the legislature still and have to be approved by the legislature and signed by the governor?
No.
Okay.
It's predetermined in statute.
But that it's dispersed directly from AEA and it's not subject to the appropriation process?
Well, let me back up. We receive from the endowment the PCE first, and then depending on what earnings are left, then the formula is followed as far as community assistance, renewable energy, and rural power.
I understand the formula. I'm just asking the question of more like the mechanics of how the appropriations are made. Is that all done in-house with AEA and dispersed, or does it have to come back to the legislature to be part of the appropriations process? And
you know, I'm going to have to get back to you on that just to make sure I have the right answer.
Okay, I appreciate it.
I think I do, but I'm not sure, so.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you, Representative Lincoln. A quick question. I know it was a big change from the way that the PCE has been funded in the past. How does the board see
that process working going forward, maintaining the PCE program without the fund if the governor's proposal goes forward?
We've had conversations with the board. In the governor's proposal, AEA is still fully funded, with or without the fund. Again, like I said, it's a more competitive environment. The one thing that, if history was to repeat itself, in the years that we were in a competitive environment in Juneau, there were several years, probably about a dozen years, PCE never received the full funding that was asked for. So I can't predict the future, but I know in the past, in tight years, when we've gone and asked for full funding for PCE, they did not receive full funding.
That would have been like late 90s, mid 90s time frame?
Yeah.
That's what I figured.
A little bit into 2000 also.
Okay. Does AEA receive funds as that passes through your organization to help fund your staff and help fund any positions or PCNs in that area?
We have, Mr. Chair, we have 381,000, of which 120 goes to the RCA. The balance of about 260,000, 250, that pays for staff, that pays for travel, that pays for the administration of the program. And we have three people dedicated to the program. We have a program manager, and we have two clerks that gather the information and disperse it. And then internally within AEA, we have shared services that actually disperse the money out to the communities.
Thank you.
We also have a renewable energy fund. There's been $268 million invested in the renewable energy fund by the state. It has really bolstered the renewable energy market in Alaska. We've leveraged several hundred millions of dollars from federal and private dollars for some of these wind projects. We have 73 operational projects, 56 in development, and by our estimates, we've displaced 30 million gallons of diesel equivalent, which is about $74 million in fuel savings in 2018. When we look at the next slide, we have 295 renewable energy, or we have the renewable energy fund. Sorry.
Just to back up to the renewable energy fund.
Yep.
It looks like those. If you could supply us with the list of those communities and the projects that they've funded as well. I see the map, and that's very helpful. But if there's a list of those communities that have received funds for projects from the renewable energy fund, that'd be helpful.
Mr. Chair, we can do that. Do you mind if we go back to 2018 forward? The slide represents 2008 forward. Would that be? I'm looking for a time frame.
When did the funds? 2008 to 2019 would be great if you could do that. Yes, that would be. That'd
yeah,
be good.
No problem. We can easily do that.
Thank you.
Also, with renewable energy funding by energy, I want to kind of give you an idea of where the money's been spent. Primarily hydro and wind, followed by biomass, heat recovery, heat pumps, some transmission, a little bit ocean river, and a little bit of solar. So the money, as you can spend, is across the spectrum. We also have the Power Project Fund program, where we have currently 18 loans outstanding. $27 million has been committed. 10% or $10 million, 10.7, is uncommitted. It's a flexible loan program, and it covers all aspects of the supply side systems. We vet the loans for economic and financial viability, and participation continues to increase. One of our largest projects that hopefully will come online this year is the Halungnai Hydro Project, which is down in Prince of Wales Island. That is scheduled to be complete this year, and the state has, AEA has $20 million loan in that fund, and then also another $6 million in grants. So we're heavily invested in hydro in Southeast and that one particular project.
Representative Zelkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Stepping back to the previous slide and the visual depiction of that on the slide before it, just kind of stepping back to my comments earlier about energy efficiency, are some of those dollars, the $14.6 million that have been spent in transmission, what type of projects would that include? Is it just upgrading transmission lines, or is there any resources in terms of as communities kind of step into setting up priorities for renewable energy, does this particular pot of funding, can it be used to help communities prepare for bringing projects online? So addressing some of those energy efficiency issues as maybe a foundational step.
Through the chair, to understand your question, you're talking about like the planning and the design phase of projects?
To some degree, just I guess mostly curious if energy efficiency projects qualify under this particular fund as a precursor to renewable energy projects broadly.
Yes, they do.
Follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
I would just love any additional information that AEA can provide to our office related to that.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Von Holtz.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. So I had a question actually about heat recovery and what qualifies as heat recovery for this program.
I will get back to you on that. I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I don't want to give it. Part of the heat recovery is sometimes off the diesel generation of the powerhouses, mm-hmm. trying to cover that heat. Mm-hmm. Not to get too in the weeds, we do have an issue we're working through EPA on because we do prefer a certain type of generator, a marine one, mm-hmm. In rural Alaska where we can recover the heat, and that heat can be used to help heat the schoolhouse or the community building or city hall or something like that. And EPA does not care for those generators being used in rural Alaska, and so we don't have that much for heat recovery, but I'll get to the exact information on the heat recovery.
So do they have concerns about those kinds of generators because of emissions?
Emissions.
Okay.
But one of our challenges is a marine generator is actually more robust in rural Alaska mm-hmm. than it is with everything with all the emissions on it. We have a greater failure rate with generations with generators with all the emissions on it as opposed to using a marine version. And so what we're forced to do is rebuild the generators that we currently have and overhaul them at the cost of a new generator.
So is that because they're more technically complicated if they have additional emissions?
Correct.
Sort of capacity on them? Huh. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, let's see here. Of the $29.5 million approved in the 18 active loan funds, we just want to kind of give you an idea of where those lines are dispersed. Obviously, diesel powerhouse is the majority. We do have the hydro. We have 6 loans in hydro, 2 in one in biomass, and 1 in a distribution system. So of the loan portfolio, we do the diesel powerhouse kind of stands out as having more money invested in that through this loan program. We have alternative energy and efficiency, whether across the board. These are the programs. We have programs that focus on commercial buildings, rural public buildings, facilities. We also work on statewide outreach and education in working with, whether it be the Valley Commission or the Department of Energy or others, to work through grants as well as administer grants for them. We also have the various programs that we have the Remote Alaska Energy Efficiency Program. We have Commercial Property Assess Clean Program. In wind right now, we have, through this fund, we have $64 megawatts installed capacity in the state. Half of that is Fire Island. The other half is in other parts of Alaska. We work with feasibility studies, project development, technical assistance. With biomass, we have 20 operating systems. It's a federal partnership, and we have 150 in pre-feasibility currently. And with hydro, we've assisted in 70 hydro projects, and Alaska right now is clearly 30% hydro. Obviously, the champion for that is Kodiak Island. You look at Kodiak between wind and hydro, they're really the example to live up to.
Representative Von Holtz.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think Ketchikan also does a good job on hydro, if I understand correctly. My question is in wind. Where is sort of the most opportunity present that hasn't been taken advantage of in wind?
Well, through the chair, one of the things back in, I guess about 2000, we did an atlas, basically the energy mm-hmm. opportunities through Alaska. We're in the current process of updating that. We hope to have that done by the end of the year. And with that, we used at that time with National Labs, Department of Energy, AVAC. We're looking at updating that information now 15 years later as technology and wind and other renewables have changed. Does that change what was done 15 years ago? And I think that new atlas is going to help guide us where those opportunities could be with the newer technology that we have. And batteries are a big mm-hmm. have seen a big jump in the last 15 years too.
Yeah, what's the timing on that?
We hope to have the report out by the end of the year.
Okay, thanks.
I would like to say the end of the fiscal year, but I'm going to go the end of the year right now. Depends how long.
That was an atlas put together under the Palin administration, mm-hmm. I think was the one you're talking about, and it was good. And I asked Mira Kohler about that just for the committee, and she said that part of the problem is the implementation and the cost of putting it, of what would come out of those energy projects don't end up being feasible for how much it costs to put the projects in. But an updated atlas, hopefully with new technology, can shine some light on that. A comment you said earlier on slide 18, this one you've got up, you said there's 64 megawatts of wind that is in Alaska right now. And you said about half of that is Fire Island.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Eva Creek was about 24 and Fire Island was a little smaller than that.
Which I'm saying for wind?
Yeah. Eva Creek, the GVEA wind project, is about 24 megawatts, and Fire Island is a little smaller than that, even though they plan on expanding it. They're working on that type of generation. Do you know what the plans are for expanding Fire Island to help bring more wind online?
That is not an AEA project. That's the private between SERI and I think it's Municipal Wind and Power.
Right.
The state had invested $25 million into the transmission line, but we don't have any ownership or party. That was a grant to the state, and then we don't have any part of what the additional plans are for Fire Island.
My understanding is that they're going to have to build another transmission line to bring more on Fire Island to help expand that to be closer to half of what this megawatt capacity is. Is there... is AEA making sure that project it has good financing and is able to come online? Have you have any part in looking at that?
They have not come forward and talked to us about what their intentions is with Fire Island or increasing it or what their ask might be of the state or AEA.
Would you have any ability to own that much like you do with the transmission system or have any assistance in funding that project?
I would imagine that would be a conversation with the governor and the legislature.
All right. Thank you.
We've kind of touched on this as far as the energy project development and financing. We have a section within AEA who does planning, evaluation, project development, the data collection reporting, helping rural utilities, and then we've touched on the financing, whether it be the Power Project Fund and our federal partnerships with the Denali Commission. We just met yesterday with the Denali Commission on what their plans were for their next fiscal year. And then next week we're meeting with Marie Kohler with AVAC to figure out what type of synergies we have on some of those issues. Because one of the things that we have, and I think she mentioned it during her presentation, is they have very healthy utilities, and that's the ones they like to own and operate. Fully understandable. There's about 80 that aren't fit that criteria. So one of the things I want to work with Mira on is what will it take to get some of these communities to the point where AVAC would like to take them over or have ownership with them and try to reduce that 80. But again, a lot depends on size, the condition of them, the condition of their power plants, their transmission. There's a lot of concerns, but they have a very good track record, and so I want to see what we can do to kind of see what we can do to help some of those utilities maybe transition over to AVAC, but obviously not all of them are going to be able to do that, and we understand that.
Representative Zulkowski.
Thank you for that. As I've heard Ms. Kohler present before, one thing that she always indicates is that it's always up to the local communities on whether or not mm-hmm. they want to opt into working with AVAC, and representing a small but very diverse, small relative to population, but a very diverse district. We always really appreciate seeing communities that are self-determined in terms mm-hmm. of being able to make that decision. I have personally had experience with AEA's kind of project development and planning resources. I'm just curious in your estimation, and maybe this is a question that I already know the answer to, but I'd like your perspective on, do you feel AEA is adequately funded in terms of being able to provide that capacity building and planning throughout rural Alaska as is probably necessary moving forward?
Through the chair, the short answer is no. You know, I think with anything, there's always opportunities to increase, not through power cost organization, but the powerhouses, the bulk fuel. We clearly have more demands than we have time, resources, and personnel for. But again, the question is, where is that balance? And that's a policy call, really, for the legislature of where that balance happens to be. We have a very good team. Our team, we have about 30 people on staff. We have shared services with ADA, so there's another 30 people that support us. They support ADA. But with that, they do a tremendous job with the resources that they have. And like I said, you can always have more people and more money, but again, it's the capacity of getting it out. Mm-hmm. And again, one of my biggest concerns is, and it's the concern of the board, and we talked about it at length at the last board meeting, is to know truly the condition of the 195 communities in rural Alaska and what we can do so we can predict their lifespan and being able to do a rotation, whether it be 30 years or 20-year rotation or that, for the O&M on it. But one of our challenges, too, is, like I said, we have communities that don't have the maintenance schedule, and then we have failures to kind of move somebody else to the front of the line. But that's a long answer to the question of, yes, there's always more money that could be used for projects like this.
Thank you for indulging me.
Yep. So, really, Alaska provides unique energy solutions to meet unique needs and opportunities for rural Alaska. I appreciate the committee. I can answer other questions. I know there was a little bit of questions about the Volkswagen settlement at one point in a previous committee hearing. I don't know if you want to hear a little bit about that or not, but if you got a few minutes, I can kind of touch on that.
We've got about 15 minutes, so I'd be interested. I have a couple other questions after that, but certainly that'd be news to me.
Volkswagen settlement. You know, Volkswagen violated the Clean Air Act. A lawsuit followed, resulting in a VW settlement. Alaska was the beneficiary of $8.1 million, and AEA was the designated lead agency for Alaska. And the state's beneficiary migration plan outlines 10 eligible environmental actions. And Alaska and AEA went through an extensive public process and worked with the previous administration to determine what those were. And of the $8.1 million, 50% will go towards purchasing more efficient school buses, 10% for public transport, 10% on commercial marine vessels, about 15% in rural prime power, the powerhouses, so about $800,000 will go towards new powerhouses. And then also, obviously, being a settlement, 15% will go towards electrical vehicle charging infrastructure to look at that in the urban areas of Anchorage and Fairbanks and the rail belt primarily. And so that was the $8.1 million settlement with Volkswagen. And most everything but the commercial marine vessel, we hope to have that money on the street this year, FY19. So we got it okayed in FY18, and we'll put it on the street in 19.
What's the process for application and distribution going to look like?
There's an application process for the communities to apply for the grants, and then they'll be evaluated and money dispersed based on that.
So the applications will come from the local governments?
Yes.
Okay.
This is not on this slide, but I'm just a general structure of AEA question. Can you please describe the working relationship with AEA and ADA and how that works?
Yeah. Part of it is drawn on my previous experience working in the Department of Commerce, and part of it is being in this role. It's a unique relationship is because obviously we have two very distinct and different missions. They are ADA is primarily to go out and finance opportunity and grow and be a conduit for bonds and between banks for economic development. ADA primarily, obviously, rural Alaska, energy-focused, being the energy office for the state of Alaska. So very two different missions. But what we do is we share shared services, which is about 30 folks. And between those shared services, they're not, with that, they do our accounting. They do the bookkeeping. We each have a comptroller. We share chief fiscal officer. We share procurement with them and contracting. And so we have those shared services, and we're co-located in the same building, and we've been that way for 20, 30 years. So if you were to look and say, well, AEA needs to be on their own outside, we still have those shared services that we do have that relationship with ADA, because it's easy to split those costs up. But they're on one floor, we're on a completely different floor.
Is that in the Atwood building?
No, that's actually in an old bank building on the corner of Arctic and Northern Lights. It's across from McDonald's. And then as far as my relationship with the executive director of ADA, anything with shared services is 50-50. Anything with the building usually is 50-50. So we have a good working relationship with personnel issues and that. They don't get involved with AEA employees. I don't get involved in ADA employees. But we work together for the cooperation of the two agencies and obviously the shared employees that we have.
And you said, sorry, just one quick question. You share about 30 staff?
Yes. This?
And how many staff are in AEA?
We have about 30 folks.
Okay. And then do you know how many ADA has, or is that a question for them?
Don't hold me to this, but about 25.
Okay.
They're a couple. We have 82 PCNs between the two agencies.
Okay.
Of which we have about 30, they have about 25, and the difference is the shared services.
Thank you. Representative Lukowski.
Thank you. Mr. Thayer, so I just want to clarify that the Alaska Energy Authority operates under ADA's board structure. Is that correct?
We share the same board. And what I mean by that is the board of ADA is also our board. And so the chair of ADA board is the chair of AEA. We hold separate board meetings. Mm-hmm. We usually do them the same day, and ADA's up first or we're up first as far as how we coordinate the calendar. But primarily, we're engineers and they're bankers.
Follow up?
Mm-hmm.
So how does that serve the purpose of accomplishing AEA's mission to have board members that maybe are bankers in nature and might not be as familiar with energy issues?
In our current board structure, that's not necessarily the case. It's because you have two members that are commissioners, the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of Commerce, and you have five public board members. One of our public board members is Bernie Carl. He's our vice chair. If there's anybody that knows anything about renewable energy and everything, it's Bernie. I'm saying he's more closely aligned, I would think, with AEA than he is with ADA, just in the work that he's involved in. So our board isn't full of bankers. It's a very diverse board. We have one board member that is active with MEA in their utility. So, and then we have another one that is in Ketchikan that owns several businesses. Dana Pruse, our chair, owns a construction company and owns several businesses. And so there's not a precursor that you have to have a banker or mm-hmm. an engineer on the board. It's the governor selects.
Follow up.
Mm-hmm.
So hearing you talk through a bit of representation on the board, what type of rural perspectives in terms of rural representation do you have in the context of, rural can sometimes be a broad blanket statement, but it's definitely not a monolith in the state. And when I speak about rural, I mean Village Alaska perspectives and people who understand the needs as they exist at the most basic level throughout rural Alaska. Can you speak to any sort of rural representation that might be reflected on your board, and if there's not any, how the board accommodates for that?
With our current board, we have five of the board members are new, and so I don't know their whole background, other than their bio that they have, and I've met them, but I can't speak to their individual relationships in rural Alaska or their experience in rural Alaska or rural issues. The five being three public members and the two new commissioners.
Final follow-up?
Absolutely.
So just for my edification, what is the selection process for members who serve on the ADA board?
They are selected and serve at the will and pleasure of the governor.
Thank you.
I guess on that note, I have one question. Is how do you, are there any proposals, or how do you see the mission statement of AEA and the structure of AEA changing under this new administration? How is that being discussed currently?
To my understanding, there are going to be no changes. The governor is dedicated to the mission of AEA. It was a conversation that I had before taking this role, was to understand that if the mission was going to continue or if it was going to change, and the commitment was the mission isn't going to change, and if anything, there might be some opportunities to grow the mission.
That's good to hear. I hope they can and find ways to partner with ADA, especially in the financing and banking, in terms of combined with the engineering that you guys possess to help bring more renewable energy online and lower the cost across Alaska.
One thing I think is important to note is when the governor's budget came out, there was no reductions in personnel, there was no reductions in budget. Even with the transfer going into using undesignated general funds, there was no change to our structure or our finance or what we expected for our budget.
I did see that in the budget, and that was good to see. Besides the fact that removing the sweeping the fund into the general fund certainly changes the sustainability of all these important programs that are running, and making it more competitive and a much more flexible revenue system is certainly concerning to me and probably other people on this committee. Not to speak for other people, but that is very concerning about the forward future of what might happen to AEA across the board.
I understand and I share that concern.
Thank you much. I appreciate it. Any closing questions or anything else as we close up? All right. Well, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Thayer, for
thank
coming
you.
Today. And I also want to make sure we thank Katie Conway for being on the phone and available. She's done good work for you guys in the past, and hopefully we'll continue doing that as well. So thank you again, Mr. Thayer. And our next meeting is going to the Special Committee on Energy will be this Thursday.
She did.
Yes. March 21st at 11 a.m. in this room. So please note that time change from the normal 10:15. We're going to be starting at 11. And we will hear HB 87 by Representative Steve Thompson, which I know ADA has a role in and is important to Railbelt Energy. With no further business to come, this committee will adjourn at 11:53 a.m.